Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 167 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the working-class-supported Head-On Radio Network, brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Please stop by crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch, and see for yourself what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day, today being Thursday, July 24, 2008. And indeed, yes, this is a live show. We were running classical just before this. We had a little problem with the streamer, but it's all fixed now. So we're definitely running live for the rest of the evening. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Thursday, that is July the 24th, 2008, you are listening to a live show, and you're very welcome to call in and participate in several ways. Actually, I'll be telling you more about that shortly and about our guest. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and it is there that you'll find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there to the chat room and also links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You'll find there also a link to the Head On Radio Network main site. And over at the Head On Radio Network main site, which I am only a small part, by the way, you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, as well as a PayPal button. Make it easy for you to help support the Head On Radio Network and keep the packets passing and the hard drive spinning and the fans whirring along, and that's all at headonradionetwork.com. You can get to it all by going to strictlyconfidentialradio.com. To participate in the show, you'll find you could join us in the chat room. Our links there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Also for the chat room, you can join us by calling in. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. That's toll-free. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that. That's area code 304-658-3333, 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia, as does the toll-free line. If you'd like to participate by email, email arrives during the show to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the mail during the show. So there's several ways. You can stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the chat room, register yourself a chat name. I'm in the chat room along with some of our other listeners. There's the toll-free line at 877-443-2366. And if you'd like to pay your own freight on that, it's 304-658-3333. It is wonderful to be with you this evening. We have a remarkable guest this evening, absolutely remarkable. Our guest comes to us by way of our dear friend Glenn Rivera. You can find out more about Glenn at shadesof70s.com. Glenn has brought to us, by the way, Glenn is our executive director of talent bookings here, and this evening he's really out himself. We have two guests in one. I'll explain that to you in just a moment. If you go to Wikipedia to try to find out about our guest, her name is Debbie Jacobs. If you go to Wikipedia, you'll find a reference that simply says Debbie Jacobs is a female black American singer born in Baltimore, Maryland, who has had several disco hits. Well, let me tell you something. That is not even scratching the surface. That is not even the tip of the iceberg. Debbie Jacobs is huge in the dance floors in the late 70s and the 80s and intermittently throughout all the way into 2000. I remember I used to play her records when I was DJing in the early 80s in Portland. The regular listeners know that when I have a guest on whose records I used to play, I'm always very, very nice because I'm scared. What scares me so badly about the people whose records I used to play? But Lord knows they scare me. In any case, Debbie Jacobs is with us this evening. Her name at this point is Debbie Jacobs Rock. Now, she's a native of Baltimore, and she started singing in church, as so many of our wonderful music guests have. In 1979, she did a track called Undercover Lover, and it was debuted on as a single from MCA Records, and it went to the top five in the national dance charts. The single was also, many people called it, one of the most influential sounds of the year. Now, Undercover Lover was also the title of her first LP, and from her first LP, there were no less than four tracks released from the LP that were very successful on their own. Four tracks from one LP released as singles is just amazing. Those tracks were Don't You Want My Love, Hot Hot, All the Way. We have so many of her tracks this evening. Glenn has sent us a wonderful collection of Debbie Jacobs' music this evening. Wonderful to have her here. But the other side of the coin, I was looking through information about Debbie as I was getting ready for the show this evening, and I find out that Debbie Jacobs could qualify as any kind of a guest. You know, we often do people who are influential in the community and people who are active in the community in so many ways. Well, guess what? Debbie Jacobs, or Debbie J. Rock, is also the founder and executive director of Light Health and Wellness Comprehensive Services. Now, Light is spelled L-I-G-H-T, and there's a link to that on the Strictly Confidential website. It was formerly known as the Baltimore Pediatric HIV Program in Baltimore, Maryland, and it is a comprehensive support service to children and youth and families who've been impacted by HIV and substance abuse. The program, in fact, is recognized as a national model for services and innovation. She is an advocate for children and families and was instrumental in developing legislation for the state of Maryland for the Kidship Care Program. She's been involved in relationships between her organization and folks like John Hopkins University School of Medicine, University of Maryland Medical Systems, Glass Substance Abuse Treatment Programs, the Baltimore Planning Council, the President's Council on HIV and AIDS, the Baltimore City Mayor's Commission on HIV and AIDS. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. An amazing woman. She's also a member of the Coalition of 100 Black Women. So not only do we have someone who is dedicated to the community, we have an absolutely fabulous singer. Debbie Jacobs, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thank you. Thank you. And the only thing missing from that beautiful introduction is the fact that I am married to a wonderful man, that I call him my king. He calls me his queen. And I have a wonderful daughter who is 26 years old, who has kind of followed in my footsteps in the business world, where I could say the medical world, and now she's a nurse working with HIV-infected and affected clients. So I'm truly, truly blessed, and I'm a servant of God. So I just add that little piece.
Remarkable, remarkable. Well, I saw in one of the write-ups about you that you started singing in church and that you're back singing in church again. That must be what they meant by that.
But you know what? I never stop. If you think about it, you know, even though you're entertaining on the road, you still kind of stay grounded when you come home. And so church, I'm a singer just like any other singer in the choir. And I'm telling you, the females that sing in the choir with me are just as awesome, if not awesome. They're the bomb. So that's where my grounding is. We've always been supportive of one another and each other's careers. And So I've never left the church that I've been in since I've been born. And they've been, like I said, very, very supportive, and I will always stay there. And I think as I grew up, when people say, well, where did you get it from? I have to say that I got that talent from my dad, because my dad sounds and used to sing professionally, and he sounds exactly like Sam Cooke. So when he's still singing today in his 80s, and the little ladies go, ah, and every time, you know, he opens his mouth. So it's kind of exciting to hear my dad sing, and I just love him dearly. So I got the talent from him. And if you want me just to, you know, go up a little bit further, then I think about 17, when I turned 17, I started singing in the jazz clubs. And, of course.
Uh-huh. And did he sing? Was he also singing in the, did he have his foot in the door in those clubs?
Is that how you? My father had little spies that said, you better treat as if she's your little baby sister and make sure she's okay. And whatever they put before her, it better not be anything alcohol. It better be Coca-Cola. So all of the guys became my big brothers. And then I started entertaining and singing for people like Stan Kenton and Nina Ferguson. And when at 17 and 18, you didn't know who Stan Kenton and Nina Ferguson was. And, you know, they were big band leaders. And so being a musician singer, you'd go out and sing your top 40 standard songs when you go back into the dressing room. And then later on, when I recorded my albums and moved to L.A., and I met them later on, then I realized who they were. But everything was a stepping stone towards, you know, moving forward in my career.
Wonderful story. I too still attend the same little country church that that I grew up in and went to when I was a little boy. Although I'm not particularly from a musical family, I did at least learn to play records. And I did that in the clubs when I was.
And we'll talk about it.
Well, that was something I did during the 80s and thoroughly enjoyed it. So you always heard music in your home when you were growing up?
Always.
And did you have brothers and sisters who were also musical?
I have two sisters, one 5 years younger than me and one that's 5 years older than me. And unfortunately, it was only myself and my baby sister. And my baby sister really. Music was not her first love. She's a minister now. And I've always pushed her to sing. And so she's on one of my records, and I kind of, when I was a part of the mixing of it, I kind of, like, pushed her vocal up in the background because I wanted to put her on vinyl.
Yeah.
She has a phenomenal voice, and but that's not what she wanted to do. She's an accountant. So, okay, she watched my money.
What a wonderful family relationship. Yeah. You couldn't ask for more than that. That's very comprehensive.
It is. It is. From the holistic side, I think when you walk into the music world, it is a world that is, of course, fast-paced. And I think the role that my mom played was the role that I would pick the phone up and say, Mom, you know, I didn't understand what happened tonight or, you know, what's going on. And she was the calming one that said, you know, okay, you know, you've been taught well and you know what you need to do. And you're pretty cool and keen on who, if you get in a tight spot, you know how to ask for help. And so my mother was the one that, you know, kept things kind of like, you know, on the a good level for me to feel like I felt I was in control.
Well, Debbie, according to some of the things I've read about you, you were living in Southern California around 1979 was when you began working with Paul Sabu. I think that's how you pronounce it. I've never known for sure. How do you pronounce Paul's?
Paul's a hunk. And it's a funny story how Paul and I met because we were all on, you remember when DJs were actually producing these records and you talk about Chanson and the We Are Family, what were the two girls' names? The girls' names that did We Are Family?
Was that Sister Sledge?
Sister Sledge, absolutely. And so they were all a group and Paul was in L.A. working on his album and I was in New York with another producer, and I forgot his name, and forgive me because my memory in the 50s, I can blame it on that now.
And, I do it often, Debbie.
Good. And what Paul was wanted for his album, he wasn't really getting, and I don't think I was best in the world for what the guy wanted in New York, if I can remember, because again, his focus was jazz. So they kind of switched us. And when I met Paul, I followed directions very easy, and Paul was very adamant about how his music and whoever sang his songs, how it was going to turn out. And it was very, very challenging, but the result was Don't You Want My Love, and the results were Undercover Lover. And so he knew what he was doing. He knew what the disco world needed, and I was an instrument in that group.
I see. And Undercover Lover was, of course, the title of your first LP. And did you have, is it true you had four hits from that, four singles released that were very successful?
Back
amazing.
Back.
And we're talking about number one and at least number five positions, are we?
First female artist to have five number one hits at the same time back then on a dance chart.
Wow. You know, Debbie, it's amazing. You've done so many wonderful songs, and you've lit the light, the lives of so many people through your wonderful music. You were around during the time when the whole Chicago phenomenon of disco sucks and disco's bad and burn the records. How did that impact your career? What happened then? Because this all happened at about the time you were really breaking huge in the industry.
Mm-hmm. It was a bad time. Well, I need to talk about the good memories and the good times before that happened, because...
Okay, for sure. Go ahead.
Disco, it was a whole new world for me. And when you're talking about, and let's put the things that some people say are elephants in the middle of the room. I never worked in the gay circuit. And so it was a new world, and I was very, very fascinated by it, number one. But I was treated always wonderfully by the guys. And so thinking about the girl next door when I would go into a club, I'd have guys that would come into my dressing room, and we'd talk about and share each other's lives. So I got to learn a lot about, you know, their lifestyle, and they got to learn about mine, and we'd have, you know, several different conversations about relationships and spirituality and things of that nature. So I didn't want to leave that out of the story, because that was a very special part. And the other piece to what I loved about working in the clubs is that I felt like DJs were entertainers and artists as well. And I don't think people really, if not everybody, gave DJs the actual credit that they truly deserve. And what I would do before I was to perform in a nightclub, no matter where I went in the world, I made sure that I got to that club maybe 2 hours ahead of time, because I wanted to hear actually how that DJ was going to take that crowd that was coming in from the early, you know, evening to what he played at midnight versus what he played at 1 o'clock in the morning. And he took
very
them.
Interesting.
It was phenomenal. And you had to appreciate it. And I think I kind of, as each time I went back in the studio, those things would stick in my mind. And so I got it. You know, I actually, you know, when I came out with certain other songs, I literally was able to incorporate some of the styles of how DJs mixed their records. And I think my vocals, or how I kind of like crafted a song, it started to take on the life of so many DJs that had impacted me.
I'll be
that was important. DJs worked very hard, and still do today, meticulously putting together list of songs that make people happy. And to me, that's why I always stop at the end of the show or in the middle and say, you need to know who your DJ is. You need to know who your light man is, because everything that was done for a reason, and that was to make people have a wonderful time and go home and, for maybe 4 or 5 hours, forget their day, forget all the madness, and just say, I'm just going out to kick it and have fun.
Remarkable story, because I'm hearing you say that this was something you did because you really felt it. It's almost as if you say you're showing up earlier in the evening so that you yourself
absolutely
sort of mixed into the club versus
absolutely
just coming in as a big sudden shock. What an amazing way to do it. I've never heard a story like this before.
I would, well, and if you think about it, and then I have to, and I will talk to you in changing hat, because I always say I'm the girl next door, but I also realize and I've learned from people who would say, well, you know, I didn't come to see the girl next door. I came to see the diva that I, you know, paid for. So, okay. In some kind of ways, I always wanted to fight that stardom type thing, but I figured out a way where I could still continuously have my personality mixed into being what I was paid to do, and that was to be that star in that state. And that is, when you walk into a sound check, I needed to make sure that the DJ, the light van, and myself knew that we were a threesome, okay? And no matter what happened that night, we needed to fall in love with each other real quick, because no matter what happened, we were in it together. And none of this hand stuff, you know, if I do thumbs up, that means turn the music up. Forget that crap. We're going to talk, you know. And then it's like you think about what's going through that night. And, again, like I said, the 2 hours coming into the club, hearing him play, then making him a part of me so that I can continue to complete what he started out, was very, very important to me. And so by the time I hit that stage, I got it. And then the way we crafted my show tapes, the many, many people that have helped me out, it gave me enough time to kind of like, no matter how many sound checks you do, when once that room is filled, the sound changes. And so you need that time to figure out where the dead spots are, how you can walk through the audience, because I believed in each club that I kind of went in, I wanted to make sure that I kind of, you know, touched somebody.
Wow.
So shaking people's hands was important to me, hugging people, walking through an audience, continuously singing at the same time, by the way.
No easy trick.
Some nightclub owners scratched their head. It's just, it's some of the most unusual requests. Most people want security and keep people away, and that's not what I wanted, because that's not who I was about. I can count on my hands any bad things that happen, one hand, and I mean maybe on three fingers, and that's it in my 20-some-year career of working in the clubs. I could walk through and make people a part of the show. I'm not a great dancer, but you'd never realize I was not a great dancer, because I charm the light man. If he's got anything in it that makes me look I know how to dance, then so be it. So I'd find somebody out in that audience, bring them up there during the breaks, and help them just have fun with me dancing, or I'm jumping into the audience and having them to sing with me. So those are the fun things.
Fabulous. Debbie, I need to let you know that we have a caller who would like to speak to you. The caller happens to be a DJ. He goes by the title DJ RXMX, and Rick Ashman, and he's based in Seattle. Rick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rick.
Hey. Hey, how's everybody doing?
We're doing great.
Great. Hey, if my transmission's coming through in a real lousy manner, let me know, and I can call from a landline, Peter.
So far, it's perfectly clear. Go for it.
I can't believe it.
Sounds great.
Okay. Well, I'm out of words. I didn't even expect to get on the phone so soon to hopefully talk briefly with Debbie. I was making some notes on a piece of paper, and I was still writing down notes when you came on. So I'm just completely excited. I just can't believe that I'm on the same program right now with Debbie Jacobs.
I have the same reaction. It makes you feel any better. It blows me away too.
Yeah. For starters, and you don't have to comment much on it. Actually, I'm not going to ask this question, because if you haven't heard it yet, then my feelings might be hurt. But did you hear that mix at all, Debbie?
Not yet. Don't make your feelings. Okay. Remember I said I'm computer illiterate? I won't lie
to you.
Glenn and my other buddy Carnell said that they were going to walk me through, because I was determined I wanted to hear that mix. And not only that, I would like to get it put on my iPod, because when I work out in the morning, then I want, you know, music that I can work out. And the music that you've given me is going to be even more special because you made that list for me. See where I was. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, on the part one of the mix, there's nothing but, from what I remember without looking on my computer as well and at the playlist, but that part one is called Exalt Your Soul, is what I called it. And on the part one, part of the music, I tried to put nothing but pretty much stellar artists on there. So you got Change on there, you got BB and Q-Band, you've got Debbie Jacobs, and you've got, I think it's Isaac Hayes. I hope I'm saying that right, Isaac Hayes.
That's okay, because I'm going to mess a couple things up before the end of the night.
Yeah, I think it's Isaac Hayes. The Jacksons. There's just really good stuff on there. But the main reason why I asked that is there's like two songs on that mix. And my favorite song, no doubt, by you, is High on Your Love. And the first time that I heard that. The first time I heard that was in 1980.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, it was at my favorite club at that time. It was a church that I think you might have sang at, except it was probably a church that I don't know if you categorize it for a family sitting, if you will.
Okay.
It was the Seattle Monastery.
I remember being taken to a play in Seattle. I remember the monastery. Stupid, yes, I do.
Yeah, that was a stupid joke, actually, because the monastery was, to put it point blank, I mean, there was a lot of good spirit there and a lot of great energy, but there was also an incredible amount of drugs.
Well,
at that place, you know.
To be honest with you,
so
I got to say
that's the bad joke about it being a family church.
I don't have to get into it because they kept it away from me. I didn't see any of it. People just talked to me about music, and I had fun with it. And you just need to know that I'm very, very honored and humbled that you put me as a part of your playlist. I just can't tell you enough how that makes me feel. And so I just want to say thank you, and I'm going to get it, and I promise you I'm going to lose 5 pounds because of you, babe.
Rick, I have to interject here and ask, what this playlist, this is this one that we've run on the, as we have a segment, by the way, Debbie, that we run between 10:30 and 11 called the Gay Bar Across the Street, where we run mixed sets. Now, Rick, is this something that we've run at the Gay Bar Across the Street or something I need to run?
That's a great question, Peter. And by the way, before I answer that question, by the way, because Debbie Jacobs is on, I mean, I am just, I can't tell you all the words that I have of excitement and joy to be able to be a part of this quickly. Mm. It's her show, of course.
That's
but
okay.
Before I hopefully answer that question, you're going to have to, I mean, I'm so excited, Peter, that you're going to have to put your best diplomatic skills at work to kick me off. So in answering the question, I think you have a little bit of a spliced amount of that music, Peter. I'm more than happy to send you the set. It's like a two-part thing, and I'd love to send it to you. But I think you do have a splice of I think part one, maybe you have a couple of songs off of that. I don't think you got the extended. Yeah, I don't think you got the extended mix. What I provided to Debbie. Does that
we'd love
your
to have
here?
It to run. We'd love to have it at some point in the future. Go ahead, Debbie.
Oh yeah. But what I wanted to also say was because I'm looking at my notes here was and it's the first note that I wrote, the first bulleted point. We're talking 1980. Okay. I was at the monastery. The monastery had, at that time, one of the greatest DJs to ever play in the Pacific Northwest, and that was Dana Andrews.
I remember Dana.
And he passed Yeah, he passed away in 1989 from an AIDS-related illness that just slowly took his life, and unfortunately, that's what ended up happening. But he was the one that played High on Your Love. Nobody had heard it. It was in, like, 1980. I have a very good memory, too, by the way. But I remember when I first heard it. As I said, it was in 1980, and this was a club that was open, similar to the Trucadero. It was open through until 6, 7 a.m. in the morning. So when Dana played that song, he had just gotten it in, and he had played it. It was about 3:30, 4 a.m., and everybody was very spirited, and the sound system there was just unreal. It was well tuned. Yeah, it was really, really well tuned and engineered. And High on Your Love came on. And I remember when it came on, two things. First thing is how blown away I was by that cut, because it was so beautifully done. And you're right, the collaboration of you and Paul Sabu.
That's right.
It's unparalleled stuff, Peter. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I'm going to say, and then I can take this off the air. The last thing that I wanted to say, there's so many things I'd love to say, but it's a show. The last thing that I wanted to say was just, oh my God, Peter, I'm getting a brain fart. I'm getting the last comment.
We have a copy, by the way, of High on Your Love that Glenn Rivera has made it, edited to a more radio-friendly format. So we'll be sure and run that.
I remember the last comment. And by the way, Glenn Rivera's mixes are unbelievable.
Oh, I've been so blessed to have him in my life.
His mixes are unbelievable. But just the last thing that I wanted to say was this, Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you really, really understand what kind of impact your records, including the High on Your Love album, that notably, if I may say so, had on the club dance music scene. The music was more than disco. It was more than disco. If you listen to the song High on Your Love, not only is it way ahead of its time, but I think that it also kind of sowed the seeds for the subsequent house music scene to come. I mean, it's just an amazing, amazing record and an amazing song. And I'll get off now because I know you have other people in mind.
I just wanted to answer that because you asked me a question, and I think it deserves an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
You asked me, did I know? Honestly, no, I did not know. I, at that time, and I still feel now that I was honored to be a part, and I say it all the time when I answer you guys back, to be a part of that world. And, you know, it's kind of hard for me to just blankly come out and say that I know what you're talking about. You know, I feel that way about myself as well. I still feel kind of funny hearing the way people talk about my vocal being an instrument, or I mean, when I can take my singer hat off and put my producer hat on, then I can think about how I kind of like took a lot of what I heard from DJs and kind of embedded it into my recording, you know, of a song. I can see it that way. But to say on a personal level that I am responsible for how things change, that's very humbling for me. I don't know any other way to say it, but I am very humbled and sometimes speechless and very emotional when I hear something like that. And so I thank you for telling me that, and I thank you for continuing to keep me in your life by playing me. And just know your love.
No problem at all. And I want to say love you back. I mean,
Thank you.
Describing as Bobby Vinaretti,
and
I love calling him the legend because he hates it because everybody hates the legend. But the legend, Bobby, you know, I love his saying, classics never die.
Classics never die.
And,
that's right.
With that, I'll get off, and I think VJC is going to call Victor. I hope he calls, because he's great to listen to. Hopefully he's not too tired tonight, Peter.
Well, I hope not. By the way, Debbie, Victor, VJC is a from Disco 935 in New York. And Rick, thank you so much for calling.
You couldn't have expressed my
my thoughts better. You know, as
my
the
pleasure.
Host, I can't
I'm
always
extend,
just
that
go on like that.
We'll see each other again. You know that, don't you?
Huh?
We'll see each other again.
Oh, yeah, in the Multiply Network, we're DJs and music people and everybody. That thing is great. Anyway, I'll go now. Anyway, you're awesome, Debbie. You're incredible.
And so are you. Take care.
Thank you. Debbie, I'm not sure how you follow that except to run the track. Let me explain our listeners. We have a large number of progressive straight listeners who didn't necessarily go to clubs and actually probably not aware.
Oh, yes, they did.
Oh, boy, I messed that one up. Just in case there is one single person out there who hasn't heard High on Your Love, I'd love to run it now if that's okay with you.
I'm fine with it.
Good. We have a our friend Glenn Rivera edited it down to a more disco radio friendly. This is the track that Rick was just talking about with Debbie called High on Your Love from 1980. As they're saying in the chat room and I too, that brings back so many wonderful memories. And the sound of that particular track was very different in its day from a lot of the other music, especially the guitar work.
Well, let me make it funny for you. As I was listening to that,
I was listening to that. I remember walking into a club in Chicago, and I met the DJ. And he says, what do you want to sing? And I said, well, okay, let's go with How You Look. I'm not playing it. I said, why are you not playing it? He said, I played it one night. They learned a line dance to it. And every night for 3 months, I had to listen to How You Look while they did that line dance. And when I would stop it, they'd say, no, put it back on.
What a hoot. You took over the poor guy's whole club. And did, what a hoot. So they were line dancing to it.
They were line dancing to High on Your Love.
Did you talk him into playing it? Did he?
I got right up there, and the same thing I just said to you guys. I got right up there and said, I heard y'all do a line dance here.
Wonder what do you recall which club that was in? What city was that?
It's Chicago.
Chicago.
Clubs there. Oh, I love that club. I can't remember the name of it. And after a while, you forget some of them if you're moving from one city to the next. But there are certain memories that you have that are left everywhere that you take back with you. But that one was one. When I hear I Own Your Love, that's when I think about line dance. I said, okay.
That was never in a million years thought of line dancing with I Own Your Love. I wonder what came over them that evening.
I don't know. Wednesday, I just was like playing High on Your Love, and all of a sudden I saw them up there just line dancing. And every night after that, they just like asked, well, can you play High on Your Love so we can work on our line?
Remarkable. Remarkable. Wow. Debbie, do you remember the first club that you appeared in and what that was like for you? That had to be, that's different from doing the jazz clubs and working in the circuit, and your dad was sort of, helping you out or at least looking out for you. What was it like in the very first time you did that?
I'm trying to think. When you have to look at it as a transition, because when the first album was being promoted, they kind of put you on to different events that are taking place. So you might be introducing Undercover Lover as an opening act for Stevie Wonder or Chaka Khan, at some hotel, maybe Billboard conference event. And I may be getting the names of what actually took place at those, what was going on, but I remember that I was opening, and it may have been just one song, and they just, graciously got me stuck on there so that people and the right people could hear that song. So I was actually starstruck more so than worried about my performance, because I know, after 10, 15 minutes, it was over for me. But I think the greatest compliment was that I actually saw Chaka Khan come out of her dressing room and stand there and watch me. And to me, that blew me away. Because that woman is a powerhouse herself.
Yeah.
Very powerhouse to this day. So that was a phenomenal feeling. Now, walking into a big club, I think before I talk about the Trocaderos and the White Parties, Russian
sure.
River, a lot of the, what's the clubs in L.A.? There's a major club in L.A. Is it Trax?
I don't recall that one. There was I didn't spend much time in L.A. I was through there, but I honestly, that was many of our DJ friends.
Okay.
Let's both.
Smell them coming through. I forgot the name of that club. They're going to kill me.
There was a Rage
I think it was a circus. And sometimes back then you were doing maybe two or three clubs in one night. So you really didn't get a chance to spend that much time in it. You may have done a straight club and earlier that evening, and then you went into the gay club a little later on, which was okay. But when you went into a place like Trocadero, oh my God. you found yourself just in another world.
it was, like I said, I will always continuously come back to how important it was to be there 2 hours ahead of time and listen to how the DJ was taking people to a level that was another planet. They may have thought it was drugs, or they may have enhanced it, but I'm telling you, it wasn't. It was methodically thought out on how they were going to play certain songs at certain moments to keep that dance floor moving at every single second and taking them higher and higher and higher. And, you know, as an, I guess, I don't know if every artist felt this, but you better be on your stuff when you hit that stage, because that was actually, mm-hmm. if it was another performer right before you. In some kind of ways, you could make people leave that floor. And so the challenge becomes, your beats are not going to be there where they're at, because back then they allowed you to control your show. A lot of times when I went back on the road in 2000, things were, okay, we're going to be at this level and we're just going to mix you right in. Well, back then we stopped and you were introduced. And you start it all over again. So you have to think about, people have to go to the restroom, you know. People are moving around to get a drink. You know, you got to quickly bring them back together and capture their attention if they're not ready for you to be there. And sometimes they don't even hear that you're coming. So that was on us then as an entertainer to stand there and make that magic happen with our music and with whatever skills that we could. To make that comeback alive so that people could really feel that same energy that they were feeling before you hit that stage. And that was exciting.
That's an amazing take on it, to point out that there is a relationship that occurs. It's magical, or it's spiritual, or it's at least a connection of some sort, perhaps hard to name, between a DJ and the dance floor. And it occurs it occurs on the radio, too. There's a,
yep.
In other words, if I were to do a show that were pre-recorded, it would feel entirely different than doing this show, knowing there are real people out there listening in real time. It feels different inside. There is some sort of connection between people, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, even after sometimes I'd finish my shows, and they would, you know, people are shocked when I could actually literally put regular clothes on, and I did it lots of times, and go and jump right out there on the floor, because I had these den mothers. People call them drag queens. I call them female impersonators, because I feel like anybody that spends 5 hours to look like a female and look better than me, it deserves that title, okay? They're phenomenal. They were my den mothers. And, you know, after I finished my show, if I wanted something to eat, we'd go to a Waffle House and have a waffle. They'd take me back to the hotel, tuck me in. So if I was going to have any exciting time, I better have it before I left the club. So songs like Harmony, you know, to bring people back down, but still you feeling that cool feeling. You remember the Harmony?
Sure. I love to play that record.
God. You know, those type of things, you just throw your head back and just go for it. You know, it makes you feel good.
Yeah. It was all very magic.
Very magic. That's a good word.
Remember those times and were a part of it. It's very difficult to convey it. Things have changed now. There doesn't seem to be it seems to be more of an electronic connection versus that real DJ vinyl dance floor artist sort of a thing going on. Debbie, tell us about your relationship with Paul. Now, what was he like to work with? And you were explaining that he knew exactly how his song he wanted the songs to be, and that you followed with and you worked with him well. What was it like working with him? What was he like?
First, did I mention Paul was a hunk?
Yes, you mentioned that. I desperately tried not to say anything, but
he is a hunk. Okay.
Okay.
I understand why women fell in love with him. I mean, some of them fell in love with, they couldn't even work. They was like somebody like Elvis Presley, you know, you stand there and just go, but you have a job to do. And when you're coming from Baltimore and you're going to LA and you're talking about a time things were not digital. You're talking about being in a recording studio where you're actually standing there where the whole violin section is being, you know, recorded. And so Paul was very, very fascinating. Paul was very hard tasked, but very sweet at the same time. And I like that. I like people who, you know, were very patient with you, you told you your home assignments, and when you get in there, will work with you until you got it right. And again, coming from that church background where we as gospel singers kind of like, you know, fling out notes every this way and that way, I equate it to like the national anthem. When I perform the national anthem, the right way to sing the national anthem is to sing it straight. Don't bend a note, okay? Every enunciation has to be just the way it was written originally. Paul had a vision of how disco music was to be sung and how the beats and everything else, even on the level of where the vocals were placed within the mix, you were not in some ways the actual star. You were a part of that whole package. And, you know, I don't know if people got kind of like upset about that, but it is what it is, and it turned out phenomenal. Sometimes you may have heard guitar tracks higher than your vocal track. And but it set a tone, and I think more so than giving me the credit, it's Paul Sabu that should have the credit because in those particular songs, he crafted every note, and I sang it exactly as Paul wanted me to sing it. Now, there are a couple of songs, the slow songs, and I think you have them as well. I said to Paul, these songs, you have to give them to me because I need to sing them the way I want to sing them. What is it? There are two songs that you had in there.
Is it I Can Never Forget a Friend? Is that one of them?
I Can Never Forget a Friend. I walked in the studio and said, may I have this? And he looked at me and sure said, what?
And the other must be All the Way.
Yep.
The one called All the Way.
Them the way I wanted to sing them.
I see. That was.
And I'm still a young girl at that time.
That's amazing to me. Debbie, of the songs that you did with him, which one would you consider to be your favorite, or the one that worked the best, the one that was more magical?
All of them.
Okay, great answer.
All of them. And I don't say that about everything that I've done. I think some of them are better than others. When you say you like them, but all of them were good. And you can find something great about all of them. I might not have been the actual instrument that made the song great, but there was something great about all of them. Make It Love. Again, growing up, you kind of box yourself into a certain venue and say, that's where I need to be, but when you have somebody else saying that I can pull these things out of you and you are better than just one category, then you start to see yourself different. All of them were good. All of them.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to hearing some more of those. But before we do, we have another caller for you. This caller is from Baltimore, and the caller's name is Carnell. Carnell, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi there, Carnell. You're with Debbie and I on Strictly Confidential. You're live. Good evening to you.
Hi, good evening. I finally got in. I just want to say, Debbie, beyond modesty, you're awesome, and thank Paul for letting you have them. Thank him, okay? Mm-hmm. And, Glenn, thank you for a wonderful job as well.
I'm sure Glenn is listening. I'm sure Glenn is listening. Glenn will be delighted. Glenn just heard you say that. I'm sure he did.
Carnell's being modest, too.
Did we need to elicit more from Carnell? Carnell?
Yes, you do.
how do you know Debbie?
How do you know me, Carnell?
Yeah, how do you know Debbie? What are you doing here?
Debbie is one of my mentors, and, well, I knew Debbie before I knew Debbie. In New York years ago, she was one of my breakup makeup songs. I never forget a friend that worked. In about a few years later, we'll say, I started to volunteer in Baltimore at a child care center that Debbie started. And I went to my sister's apartment. My sister also worked there. And I went to her apartment, saw this picture on the wall, and went, "Who is that?" She said, "That's Miss Rock." I said, "Oh, that's Debbie Jacobs."
Priceless.
I brought her upstairs, and we started playing the records. And the next day, I hauled in everything. I wanted autographs. I wanted to work. And it was a match made in love since. And so she continues to be one of my mentors and one of my dearest friends.
Well, what an amazing story, because oftentimes we see album covers and we see the artists, but we wouldn't always recognize them as that's an amazing story. So you used to go to the clubs then? Did you hear her? Is that where you were exposed to her music?
Especially seeing Debbie in another light. I had no idea. I wouldn't have put the two together, because she was educated in her child care. It was like, what she'd always done, the most I would have said is she looks like this girl named Debbie Jacobs or something. But I wouldn't have put the two together, because she put 100% of herself into it, and you just couldn't imagine her doing anything else. You know, it's just awesome.
Carnell is still being very modest. Carnell has done a lot of things on a political side that has changed, actually has fought for rights for individuals who are living with HIV and AIDS. He's done a lot of work in Congress. And, he's all about being a part of the voice of folks who are struggling. And so my hat goes off to Carnell, because, you know, he has fought some hard battles. And he's still doing so today. And I think that needs to be said. On a personal note, I've been able to go to a Carnell and say that, you know, this is where I'm at with my entertainment music and share my deepest, darkest secrets. And he's just helped me to make my music come back alive, along with Glenn. And they did it in a matter of a week and a half, and it was my God.
That's awfully fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Carnell sounds like the sort of person we might like to have as a guest on one of our non-music nights. Paul sounds like, or Carnell rather, sounds like the sort of person that we often do. Not every night is a music guest, Carnell. We often do issues, and you sound like someone I might like to talk to. I would have to email Debbie and see how I can get in touch with you.
We'll make it happen.
Okay,
definitely. But I'd like to say one last thing, not to go on with the mutual admiration, but Debbie does so much, and the one thing I'm really happy she's doing what she's doing right now, because she doesn't have to be involved with HIV. You know, she could be getting her diva on, you know what I mean, singing and all this, but she takes the time out, and she does it as though it were herself, and that's what I find so awesome, that someone can just put aside where they were going, what they were doing, and stop and take on a socially responsible posture, especially in this day and age. So that, my hat's off to Debbie. So,
thank you.
This is her moment. Leave me out of it. Okay.
I love you.
Thank you. Thank you, Carnell. That was a great call. We appreciate your calling in the show. Good evening to you, sir. And, wow, what a great friend, Debbie. He's sizey.
Yeah.
And I just loved his remark. Oh, no, that's not. That's Debbie Jacobs. Oh, no, it is. Too
funny.
And
it happens all the time. I sat on President Bush's National Advisory Council for HIV for like 4 or 5 years. And the thing I was worried about, I was like, oh, my God, who am I going to run into that? I really didn't tell them that part about my life.
Yes.
Let me back up. It has nothing to do with being Democrat or Republican, other than green, blue, pink, yellow, whatever. Okay, when it comes down to my kids and my women and my families as it pertains to HIV. And as soon as I walk in the
door for the first meeting. Here I go, the guy singing, "Don't you want?" And I said, "No, you not."
Oh no! Oh no!
He said, I got you!
Oh my stars! So the diva just follows you wherever you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's okay because it puts a smile on people's faces who are in the business world. And
yeah.
And I, to be honest with you, I fought it for a long time to say, you know, you have to keep them separate because people want to talk about, they don't, if they know you about the singing first, then they don't really want to sit down and talk about the issues. Okay? Or they don't think you're serious or that maybe you're using the issues to put more of a, emphasis on your singing. So I kind of like kept those worlds separate. And so those who have, like Carnell said, over the 20 years when I'm bringing it back in some ways because, of course, funding is shrinking in that world, and I refuse to go down. You know, my vision is a one-stop shop. I'm tired of this Band-Aid approach on how we are addressing these issues. And so if I have to bring my music back into it to make it happen, you know, so be it. So when we did a gala last year, the gala – we included my good friends Martha Wash and Linda Clifford and Jeannie Tracy. Those who have never seen Debbie Jacobs were totally like, that's not the same person. And literally that night I had to come out in a business suit, what they see, and then transform into the entertainer. My nerves were shot.
<laughs> <laughs> No doubt.
Because people couldn't. It was like, you know, a television show could be made out of it. It's like they couldn't believe it, you know. And
I believe happened in 2007, and it was Debbie Jacobs, Martha Wash, Linda Clifford, Jeannie Tracy, and and a DJ from Miami. This that had to be huge. Yes, where did this take place?
I asked Chuck Bowers at the Hippo, could I, you know, do it there? Because we need to raise funds. And I actually changed, like I changed the name to Light Health and Wellness for a reason because, again, you know, when you're talking about pediatric HIV program, then some people say, oh, woe is me, is the children. But as money shrinks, then you have to learn how to think, you know, how corporate people think or whatever, or learn how you have to go after endowments and things of that nature. And money's very, you know, people, right now things are tight. But you can't give up on, if you really want, and not to get into politics or whatever, or not to get into
We can, though. We can go there if you like.
Okay.
We do both aspects in the show. You're welcome to go there.
Thank you. It's very, very hard. I'll use myself as an example. And just a simple thing of going to the doctor and they're talking about asthma and they, within 5 minutes, tell you 20 things to do and you walk out the door. And you don't remember a thing he said. Well, the stigma's still there, and when you hear that a doctor told a 15-year-old, well, you're infected with HIV and AIDS, it's like Charlie Brown, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah.
You know, they ain't heard a thing. And but yet, on top of that, we want to put all of these new things on their, in their lives about, well, you need to take this medication, you must take this medication at this time, blah, 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 this. And they're still not past the wah, 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 wah. And so just going to the doctors is not enough. You have to have sometimes a friend, and having a friend in some people's lives, I can't tell that person that this is what's going on with me. So I need a supportive network built around me and built around me quickly. You know, so that the goal is to get them and keep them in the medical care and let them know that you, too, can live a productive life. And not saying that every day is going to be rosy, but, you know, you still can become the president of the United States if you want to. And that's what we're all about, not, you know, helping people to say, okay, tomorrow's it. No, it's not. Tomorrow can be the new day, the best of your life. And that's the good piece about what it is that we do, that we help people become self-sufficient and, you know, make a better life for themselves and their children and move on. So as government money dries up, we have to find creative ways. If I have to stand out on the corner and sing with my little
bless your heart. How bless your heart,
oh,
Debbie. What a sweetheart.
$4 million that I need for my new building that I want for my shop. No problem. Just tell me what corner I need to be on.
I know it, and you and your business suit up there with Linda Clifford, just whatever it takes. What a great attitude.
It is by any means necessary now.
I see, and this took place in...
What's some of those problems people have? We need your money.
Yes, yes. Well, diva for food.
Yep.
So, was this this in Baltimore? This is the hippos in Baltimore, is it?
I birthed it, and I say birth because, again, although I felt like my life, or my father felt like my life, thought needed to be in R&B, and I always wanted to be a Phyllis Hyman. I love Phyllis.
Oh,
Hyman.
Yeah.
And I had a chance to meet Phyllis Hyman, and she's beautiful. And I always wanted to be Phyllis Hyman. Everybody's got their favorite artist.
And she was huge.
She was wonderful. And, you know, but disco was where I was going, and I didn't understand why I was going disco world, but I do now, because had it not been for the disco world, and I was there when things happened. And back then there was no government funding, and so we would get together in states that we were in, and you know, people had a habit, if they wanted to give you a tip on a stage when you were singing, and I kind of stopped in my show and I said, you know, the nightclub owner paid me to come and, you know, perform for you, so you don't have to give me a tip. But I tell you what, if you want to really give that tip and give it to a good use, At the end, then I'll have the nightclub owner, you know, count it up and write a check, and you can write it to your program in your city or another city that was doing something for HIV and AIDS. And when I saw Ryan White on a magazine, you know, I said, whoa, this is happening to the children. And I came back to Baltimore to find out what type of services were happening with the children in Baltimore, and mm-hmm. And started digging from there. You know, we took a check to University of Maryland, the doctor who had the first 50 diagnosed children, and it's funny because he said he didn't care where he got that money from. You know, he just took it. And I asked, could I volunteer? And he said, sure, thinking I would never show up, and I showed up that Wednesday, and it started a relationship with the moms who would sit at the table while I was drawing with their kids, and they'd come out and they'd say, well, you know, why did the doctor say my child had AIDS? And I said, well, you know, did you go back in and ask them? Then all of a sudden the doctor come out and say, why black people spend so much money on their tennis shoes? Go back there and ask them. But, you know, out of that became a relationship and a niche for me that, you know, paralleled me to go back to made me go back to school to get my my master's license in social work. And I've never been too proud to ask people how to do things. I know Billy's not about writing a grant, you know, or forming a 501c3, but I knew how to ask people for help. And everybody that I asked, you know, kind of just pitched in, you know, like University of Maryland School of Law. They opened up their department, funny, and I always say it's the Lord, because they didn't have a law, a clinic that teach people how to create a 501c3, and they did it for me. A law firm, you know, took on a legal piece, and then the clinics, you know, both Johns Hopkins and University of Maryland stepped in, and that's how we started the child care program, because it was a warm, safe, nurturing environment for families to, you know, bring their children at that time when such stigma was going on. Now, you know, speed it up to the day, we don't have that many children that are infected as we did back then because of the medications, but still we have to work with parents because parents have to, you know, be as healthy as they can be to help the children. And we not only cater to just that particular population, but if you have any needs, special needs with your children or special needs with the adults. So we don't want to keep kids isolated. So it's like you said, recognized as a national model, and we'd like to replicate it. We're asked to replicate it in other states, and then I kind of like act as an advisor to some of the other countries who want to, you know, replicate the program in their countries. But do
have they called on you to travel? Have you had to travel?
I'm not going nowhere. I'm not going to Africa. Call Oprah.
Okay.
I will do satellite training here from Baltimore. Okay. I can be in your living room or anywhere they want me to be, but I'll be downtown in some conference room saying, "Hi, my name is Debbie. How can I help you? implement a program for youth services." We have a phenomenal group of those 50 kids that I was talking about. They're now grown, you know, and we're talking about the doctors would say they wouldn't see their fifth birthday. Well, some of them graduated from college 3 or 4 weeks ago, you know, and are doing very, very, very well because we were able to build support services around them that help their parents, you know, get back into the workforce or go back to school. Some of them are holding down wonderful jobs that help other people. We have counseling and testing outreach and case management and the whole gamut, health education risk reduction programs that we go into the prisons, you know, for pre-release women that are about to come back out, you know, go into substance abuse programs and homeless shelters, because we're all about educating people about how to live. And, again, not a Band-Aid approach. It doesn't work. In our lives, things break down every now and then, you know, and we kind of need to go back to where we kind of get that, you know, energy from or direction to say, wait a minute, you have a roadblock here, but that shouldn't stop you. What's your goal? You know, so you can have a house and buy a car like anybody else. You know, just map it out.
Debbie, the work that you do is extremely important, and people don't, the AIDS is, and HIV have become, you know, tossed about words. People who are not affected don't really understand the terrible impact it has when you hear those words. I remember when I was diagnosed, it was just prior to when the cocktails came out. I was diagnosed the next month, the cocktail. But the doctor told me, Mr. Godbold, you have AIDS and you're in the final stages. And, you know, it's like, you know, these things are over.
How many years ago was that?
That was 10 years ago. I'm just having a really, really long final stage. But in fact, people
having a really, really long good life.
Well, this is absolutely true, and it's hard enough raising kids without throwing in that whole issue on top of it.
Absolutely.
Families
and
need help.
Young mother.
Mm-hmm. Families definitely need a lot of help. What are the rules? They don't know what the rules are. No one knows how to do it. In fact, people have kids. So many people I've never had kids, so I'm speaking off the cuff, but, you know, when I was 20, 21, 22, I wouldn't have known anything about how to raise a kid. Plus, you add that into it, and it just becomes terribly complex.
Yeah. But on the flip side, I think one of the things that has been helpful is the fact that we can use their ability, that the fact that they have kids, to get their act together. And then again, you can't say one situation fits all. Everybody has their story, their journey, and I don't want to spend most of your time talking about it tonight, but the point is that we do have to continuously educate those who don't know, because 9 out of 10 times, you know that there's somebody in their family who has it. And a lot of times when I'm talking to business folks, you know, I will always point out to them, well, Deb, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, I say, well, you know, okay, picture your best money-making person on your job, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, he did come, or she came to you and said, you know, this is what's going on in my life, you know, and I need some help. Where would you go? What would you do? And you know, within 2 seconds, that person says to me, I don't know. Well, now you do know to find out. What did you do? Because you want to keep that person productive and healthy because he's making you money. And not only that, that gives him self-worth of that he still needed. So, you know, find out what you can now. And again, I think if anything that I want to leave a message with, parents play a key role. And I say parents, I don't care if you're not with your baby's mom, as they call it today, okay, or your baby's daddy or whatever, but you need to step up and take responsibility and listen to your kids. Your kids are being faced with a lot of, you know, peer pressure, gang violence, you know, to join gangs, so many things that I think that I don't know whether or not, I think we were shielded from a lot of stuff when we were growing up, and I'm going to date myself. I'll be 53 this year. You know, so things were not kind of like as open as it is today. They see a lot via television, whatever, and they don't really have a lot of people that can really sit them down. Or truly, parents have come to me and say, I don't know how to start the conversation. Start the conversation. Well, I was talking to this person today, and this person said, this is what goes on in school. Is that true? Because teens are pretty honest. They'll tell you straight up, yes, it does. I can get drugs very easy in school if I wanted to. You know, they just want to be heard. And there are some good kids out here, some very, very good kids. So I think that we, as a nation, need to say, you know what, we need to start listening to them and supporting them, because they do want to become, you know, some of the things that they dream about, those who still remember how to dream, and those who don't, we need to help them dream. But getting back to your show.
Well, I just want to say that God has blessed us twice with you, Debbie. He blessed us back in the late 70s and early 80s, and now he's blessing us again. You're truly remarkable. Yes. I need to tell you that we have another caller for you. We have Vijay Sina. Vijay Sina is the proprietor of Disco 935 in New York. Victor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Victor.
Hi, Debbie. Jacob.
How are
rock
you?
The box. I tell you, you know, it's strange. I'm listening to your stories about the HIV and everything. And a quick thing before I talk about what I want to talk about. A girlfriend of mine, I'm not with her anymore. I was with her for 15 years, and she's HIV positive. So, I was very supportive of her and throughout the years.
That's right.
And I understand the stories that you're talking about with the government and everything. It's very,
mm-hmm.
very difficult today with the nonsense
mm-hmm.
that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Got to do whatever you have
anyway,
to do.
Anyway, so what I wanted to say was that I have a show, it's called The Disco Flight, that I do on another station called WDA1 on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And this past Sunday, I dedicated the show basically to you because you were going to be on with Peter tonight. And I put in a promo where, you know, I was telling my listeners to tune in tonight because you're going to be on with Peter Gobble.
Oh, God bless you. Did you tape it?
Yes, I do. I have it on Multiply if you want to download it.
I do.
It's a two-hour show, and I started the show off with High on Your Love.
Okay.
And also in there, there's another jam that obviously was a big hit in 1979, Don't You Want My Love.
Don't You Want My
Love. Which I did what's called a VJC remix project. So I also can have that if you want. I can send that to you, too.
Yes, I would
love
that.
Well, Victor, if you would send those links, I'll be sure that she gets them. I'll just be sure that she gets them if you send the direct links to Multiply.
Right. Another thing is, I know Linda Clifford was on, Pamela Stanley was on, Jessica Williams is now... Debbie Jacobs. I mean, Glenn, what do you find all these divas?
Well, that's what we would all like to know. What is this disco magnet that Glenn Rivera wears? Because we just can't figure it out.
I would like to know what do you get this potion from?
and you know, you should see us all on one stage in one night. I mean, like I said last year when it was Martha, myself, Jeannie, and Linda. And we did, quickly during the sound check, I had a track of We Are Family. And what we did was within maybe 15 minutes, we recreated a different version of it. And people really thought that it was a recording and wanted to buy it afterwards. But it was the fact that people came up and said, I've never seen anything like this. And we all looked at each other because this was a part of our world for 10 years where we would all be on the same circuit, you know, working together. Jessica is the bomb, you know. Jessica,
I have her collection. I have your collection, Pamela Stanley and Linda Clifford.
Pamela.
two tons of fun, which is Marsha Wash and I forgot the other lady's name.
Jeannie Tracy or...
Yeah, Jeannie Tracy. I have her stuff. I have her stuff. She does some house music, some dance music for today. I mean, I play it all. I mean, I've been a DJ since 1975. I mean, I never saw you perform, but I followed your career throughout the years, especially... Well, one quick story was that in 1979 here in New York, mm-hmm. I used to work down here in the Bronx in what's called an avenue. And mm-hmm. in the avenue, they had a lot of stores. And in that store, we used to be in all throughout the stores on a station called WKTU Disco 92 here in New York. At the time, all the stations were locked, all the stores were locked onto that station. And it was called a lunch break. And in the lunch break, there was a mix of yours going in, was called "Don't You Want My Love." And when I first mm-hmm. heard that, I mean, what happened was, to me was I didn't walk to the store; I ran to the store for that record. It still sounds awesome.
That is awesome.
Victor, I could just see you running.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
I don't take that lightly. I think that's a phenomenal story, and I appreciate that.
Right, Paul did an excellent job on that production work, and your vocals was the. The song from beginning to end was just magical. I mean, I still hear it, and I get goosebumps hearing it. I mean,
good.
It's a great song. I mean, Hot, Give It All You Got was hot, too. High on Your Love. I mean, I can go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, great talent and mm-hmm. also what you're doing with the AIDS and all that. I mean, God bless you.
Thank you. He does.
All right. Besides that, I know I'm not trying to – it's almost time to for your show. I mean, it's not like another 30, 40 minutes. So anyway, I just want to say, you know –
We have another of 40
I'm talking
40
to Jacobs. All right. And
thank you, Vic.
Just keep up the good work. And
thanks, Ben.
Whenever you come up with another hit, whatever, you know, a promo or anything, send it my way to Disco 93.5. I will gladly play it on my station.
You got it.
Okay,
thank
have a good
sir.
Night.
Be blessed.
Thank you, Victor.
Bye.
Debbie, do you have other concerts coming up, fundraisers like this? Because the talent that your talent plus the other people, Martha Wash, Linda Clifford, this that had to be huge in Baltimore.
Well,
I mean,
we put that whole show together, and we had Abel. He you know, DJ and Abel.
Yes, in Miami.
We got so many emails from. Nightclub owners, one in New York. I think we got one in New York. We got one in San Francisco asking us to move the show to New York. And at that time, I wore so many hats when we put that thing together because the girls, you know, they came in, so I felt like I needed to be at the airport when they came in, you know. We had to get up and we had to be in full makeup at like 5:30 in the morning. To do, you know, television promo, you know, for it, and then get ready for sound checks. And so by the time that night came, it was like such a, you know, I don't know how, I have such an appreciation for fundraising committees or nightclub owners or managers now, because it is not an easy job putting a show together, you know, when you're just going in just to get out of the car and come in and sing. That's the easy part. But being a part of putting everything together, oh my God, you know, that was a learning experience for me. And I think that if somebody put a package together, I think Abel has said that that's something that he wants to do because he is so busy. I think that you'd find where you'd get a lot of us that could really pull it off. You know, and really do a fantastic job. And like I said, of course, it doesn't always have to be. I'm always going to promote my, I have no shame in my game in promoting my program. I am after a couple $1 million. So you have not because you ask not. So there's no shame in my game in what I'd be doing out there for, that's what I would be doing. But I think it could happen again.
Well, it's a remarkable position that you're in to have done what you've done and to mm-hmm. be acquainted with these people who are willing to help. And I can easily see you coming up with several $1 million you are a mind
goal.
To take it on the road. Mm-hmm.
It's my goal. I think God is putting people in my lives that's going to help. I can't do it all by myself, and I give myself 5 more years, and then I'd just like to retire, and like you say, do a couple of shows, and then I'd like to teach, and I'd like to help other people build programs, capacity building and technical assistance, so that they don't make some of the mistakes that I made when I first started, or others, made. You know, if we can keep this going and keep sharing our knowledge with younger people that are coming up that want to do work, I think, we got to keep hope. That's all I got to say about that, as far as stuff says.
Debbie, earlier in our conversation, you had mentioned when working with Paul that the two slower songs, I Can Never Forget a Friend at All, you asked him if you could have those, and I think is the way you put it.
If I could have control over how they were sang. And he said, okay.
I would love to run one of those for the listeners of those two, which we have a copy of each, the I Can Never Forget a Friend and All the Way track. Which one would you choose for us to listen to?
I Could Never Forget a Friend, because I have one that loved that song who passed away. And so I think that's the one that I would want to hear, because I haven't heard it since she's left.
I see. Well, I'd love for the listeners to hear all of your music. Really, we've talked about so many things, but we will be running your music as it. By the way, I have to run Harmony.
We're not running our mouths anymore, and we don't run any more music. I think that there's one song that I would love for everybody to hear because it was very, very special, the Forever Medley. It's where Martha and Isadora did backgrounds with me. And that is phenomenal. And that, I'll come back and talk about that because that was very, very scary for me.
Well, we can actually run that one next and then hit I Can Never. Okay. But now the Forever Medley. Now, is this the one that we have? The story on that is that I have it, that it was recorded from tape and never released. Is that right?
No, here's my husband's plug. We got albums, it was actually, produced by Artie Jacobs, but he wasn't called Artie Jacobs, he was called Aristotage back then. Some friends of mine were executive producers on this. They gave us the money. It was my band from Baltimore that actually did the music, and we flew out to San Francisco, and we got Martha and Isadora to do backgrounds, and again, I have to put my producing hat on of controlling the vocals, and can you imagine going in there trying to tell Martha and Isadora how to play? They gave me their little finger, say, come on in here, little girl. Number one, you're going to sing with us. Number two, you get back to Baltimore, you better whip our butts. Sing this song in class, I will tell people, you need to understand the history behind the song, that, although I'm about to sing this song for you, but you got powerhouse women that I'm so honored that's doing backgrounds with me with this song words cannot express how I feel about those two women.
Wonderful. Well, Glenn has told me that he's been especially moved by this track, The Forever,
I think it was when we did this. This was in, I don't know what year it was. But let's put it this way: I've been in enough clubs; they got it down pat how DJs do things, and so literally, I was ready vocally to kind of put it in with the music where it flows, just like DJs flow with music. And I think hopefully that it reflects in the actual singing of it, because every area in the song, there's something going on that keeps it in energy going. And it goes up and down, but...
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to hearing it too. The... Bob has it queued up for us, and this is the track. It's called Forever. Roll it, Bob.
they change with the time. Lately all I've been seeing are people throwing love away and losing their minds. Maybe it's me who's gone crazy.
For I had not heard that until just now. I didn't play it today. I wanted to hear it on the show, and I've got to tell you, that is amazing.
Mm. It was an awesome experience.
It had to have been.
It's very hard to introduce a new song in a show that people have never, ever heard. And so that's the true test of when, especially when a song starts off at a ballad. So I actually literally asked him to bring me a bar stool and put it back down in the middle of the floor and take it from that part. And again, it's talking about, seeing all these people, just wasting love, you know. And it's like you're watching people's reactions. It's like, oh, okay, you know, it's like it's a
wow.
phenomenal song to sing, and I enjoy it.
I should say so. It is remarkable every way. I'm going to have to talk our friend Glenn into sending me the full-length track. I'd love to run the full-length track on one of the features.
We went down and dug up some vinyls, so I'll get about 100 vinyls, I say, you guys.
We had an email arrive while that was playing from our friend Larry Sanders. Now, Larry Sanders, his remixes, the funds, the proceeds go to support children's charities. He lists several children's charities at his site over at MorningstarMelody.com. And he is asking me to ask you where donations can be sent in your name for children.
Ooh, Light Health and Wellness Comprehensive Services and 2800 Maryland Avenue, Baltimore, Maryland, 21218. Attention Debbie Rock. And if he just wants to go on to the website, which is www.lighthealth.org, there is a link for donate.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you.
He's sincere.
I'm just so honored.
Well, Larry is one of our dear friends. He is a first-generation DJ and goes back to Fire Island. And
Fire Island? How old is Larry?
Larry is our age. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
He is our age. We are all in our 50s.
God
That's all I'll
bless
say.
Larry is still alive because there were some wild nights on Fire Island, too. I got something early those nights, too. The limo driver's talks. I know what goes on after the fact when I'm going back to the airport. Lots of nice nights there.
I see. Well, you could probably tell us some amazing stories about Fire Island.
Don't let me forget about it. My Grace Jones story, okay?
Oh, wonderful. We have been doing that. And I hadn't, I've been so interested in what you've been, I haven't thought of asking you that. Did Glenn tell you that we always ask what the Grace, if someone has a,
y'all
I'm glad
Grace
he did
Jones
that.
Stories. Don't let me tell, I got to tell you about my Grace Jones story.
Please
okay.
do.
Grace Jones, the best story. That they just sit around and have marshmallows and they say, well, you know, when you're out on the road, who gets the most attention? Grace gets the most attention. Okay, it's like Debbie James is a nice girl. We had a wonderful time with her. But by the way, we had Grace come. Did you hear? Grace is phenomenal. But we'll talk about Grace.
Okay. it never ceases to amaze me the stories that we hear that Grace Jones is amazing but outrageous talent, to say the very least.
But, you know, it's a funny one. I feel like I was blessed because I was allowed to be an opening act for Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to know Grace.
Yeah.
And Grace, it would be like, I don't know if you've ever been to a Grace show, but, you know, when you're opening, you may start at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. Grace would show up.
Oh, I see.
But people were mesmerized. They did not move. And I've heard some songs of Grace that were demos. So I know Grace can sing. Grace get out there on the drums and bang on them for like maybe 10 minutes. And then she's sick. I don't know if you've ever seen a stick of boot on somebody's chest and pour wine on them and rip open their shirt and they would fall out and die. And I mean, when she would just sing two or three words, you could hear a pin drop. And one night I asked, I said, Grace, so you can sing. What's up with that? She says, Zebby, they came to hear you sing. Your beautiful thing. They came to see me. This is the most outrageous thing. And I used to say, well, they're going to pay me $50,000. I would break up a couple buttons.
Oh, my stars.
You know, so in a way, it's kind of sad because, you know, Grace is a very good singer, very good entertainer, but that's not what they came to see. And I learned the lesson in that. You know, they were there to see the most outrageous thing that she was going to do. But she was a phenomenal singer. So, and I met a lot of great people. You get to meet them behind the scenes. Mm-hmm.
Did you meet Sylvester?
Oh, God. Sylvester was one of my best friends.
Really?
And, yeah. And Sylvester, the last time I saw Sylvester, we were in Rush River. And, you know, I don't know, people, I don't, they should be shocked by this, but, you know, I was doing a Red Iron thing. I was doing a show, I think, in North Carolina. Then I just took a late flight to Russian River, and then I quickly finished that show up. By the way, everybody in that place at Russian River were gorgeous, okay? They were hunks. There wasn't an ugly person in the place, okay? I always have to put that in there because I have to stop and take pictures and come back and show it to the girls. You know, they don't know how to see me. It's like, watch for the stomach. Okay, I'll get back to the story. Anyway, I had to be in Myrtle Beach the next morning. And so Phil said he wanted to talk with me, and I said, well, come on in while I take a shower. And that's when he shared some things, you know, that were going on with him. And you always remember things, and all I can remember was that I stopped and the water was running down my face, and that's it. He was phenomenal. I have old VHS tapes of Phil and I. He just would pop in with maybe Jocelyn Brown down in Backstreet, and he'd get up on the stage, and he'd just start singing. And to me, those are the fun days when he'd pop in, and we would just get up there and just cut the fool. And so I miss him.
He often comes up on the show. The listeners will remember in fact, we ran a Sylvester track the other night. I think it was last night. We ran Band of Gold, and Sylvester was an absolutely stunning female impersonator. I'm told he was absolutely beautiful when he dressed and tall.
Yep. Stellar. I call him Stellar. He was a stellar artist and one that could have, if things had been different. Well, I think he did reach that plateau, but it wasn't. It just didn't happen. He was bigger than, to me, he is one of the biggest. When we think about big, we think Donna Summers. I think that Sylvester was the biggest.
Sylvester was amazing, just amazing.
Amazing. And that's my humble opinion.
I still remember seeing, even today I can remember the Megatone labels going round and round on the turntables, with titles like Band of Gold and all the other wonderful hits. So you make me feel mighty real. Just amazing stuff. He was an incredible talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To get Martha on the show, her genie, let them tell you stories about Sylvester and them.
Well, you know, Martha Wash, I would love to have Martha Wash on at some point. I'm sure she has some. She worked with them. She was one of the weather girls, wasn't she?
Yeah, it's raining.
Yes,
I got the power.
And that's right. Yeah.
I'll give Glenn the number.
Okay, if you give our executive director of talent booking the number, I'd surely appreciate it from the bottom of my heart.
I got you back.
Okay. We were talking about the track called I Can Never Forget a Friend, and that was one of the ones you had mentioned that Paul and you worked on. Who wrote this track? Who wrote this? And
Paul.
Can you tell us about the time when you sang it or what the session was like?
Again, remember, sessions back then were not computerized, so we had an opportunity to actually work with the musicians. And so you're working with basic musicians, you're working with the keyboards and you're working with drums and things, so you're part of a live session. I can never forget a friend. When we recorded it, there was no sad time, but I related to the words and I felt like it was something that would be important to those who listened and those who kind of like were having, you know, the same type of relationships in their lives, they could relate. later on, when my friend died, that song took on that meaning for me. But at the time that I wrote it, I can't say to you that any song that I ever recorded was based on a bad love affair or a bad relationship or something traumatic. I literally, you know, it became a the song actually became a part of me, or it was something that I felt inside that helped to create the song to be what it was. But, you know, now that it's there, then later on those things happen, but not at the time that we were recording it. Paul allowed me to free reign, sing it the way I wanted to sing it, and so I felt good about that.
Well, I think this was on the album that had High on Your Love and Hot. This is one of the tracks that was on the album, and I have never heard it, so I'm looking forward to hear it, because I've never heard you sing a ballad of any kind. And so this is a treat for me, and I'd love for the listeners to hear it. Bob, it's the track called I Can Never Forget a Friend.
And though I will love again,
Debbie, that's absolutely fabulous, and I have to tell you, I'm just enchanted by the violin at the end that echoes the lyrics, the tones that echoes your lyrics. It's just stunning, a beautiful track. Yeah, I'm very touched by it. The back in the day, and that was a real violin, right? That was a real violin.
You heard is everything is locked. There's nothing electronic about anything.
Absolutely.
Everything
beautiful.
Was all real. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
That's that was the powerful thing to walk in and see a whole violin section. And when I say a section, I'm talking about maybe 50 people, you know, or a whole horn section. And that's what Paul was about. He didn't skate on anything. He had a certain vision, and it had to be that way. And you got the end product, and it's phenomenal.
There had to be a feeling of, wow, oh, these people are playing for me to sing. It had to be overwhelming to walk in and to see that.
Very humbling and very honored. And again, studio musicians, they take it as a job. So... they're used to it. That's their money. How they make their money is they go in and they're asked to, play on anything and everything that they can, you know, get to be a part of. But, I think for me it's more humbling, like you said, because, they're just so good at what they do. And, I was excited to be a part of that.
I bet. Debbie, I want to mention that we're posting these links in our chat room, but for those who are not in the chat room, I'd like to point out that Debbie has a site at myspace.com/DebbieJacobs12, and those are the digits, 12. That's myspace.com/DebbieJacobs12. And I'm also, we have a link for cdbaby.com, and that's cdbaby.com/CD/DebbieJacobs. Debbie, is the music being used as fundraising for the organization? In other words, are there links on MySpace to CD Baby? How does sales work these days? Because people still want me.
Glenn's going to help me with that. And all this is new. Let me be real with you. I didn't even know MySpace existed until 2 years ago. Okay, just hearing about Facebook. Never heard about Multiplying until last week. So he's opening up new doors for me that can help me to move, you know, further those causes. And in return, I feel like things that I might have said, you know, I'm not going to do anymore as far as the music, my heart having, you know, read so many different things that people have sent me, really says, okay, maybe you really, really need to rethink this thing, because I'm not a Beyonce, I'm not interested in the fortune and the fame and all that kind of stuff, I enjoy singing, that's it. It's plain and simple. And if I can make somebody feel good with it, then I've done my job. I used to tell people that, you know, sometimes everybody didn't have a great night where they had a full packed house. But you tell people, you know, so long as one or two people showed up, the show still is the same because you came out to see a show. And if you can walk out that door feeling good, don't worry about the rest of the people that didn't make it. You did. And that's what it's all about, touching one person at a time with what you do. And if it's good, then it's what's meant to be.
Debbie, you have such a beautiful heart. What, how wonderful for you to share that with us. Indeed, we haven't gotten to a lot of your music, but I assure you we'll be using it in future shows as go-to break tracks. Tell us again the mailing address for the Light Help. Yes, and the email address.
It's Light, LIGHT, Health, HEALTH, and Wellness, Comprehensive Services, Inc., 2800 Maryland Avenue, Baltimore, Maryland, 21218. And I got a feeling Glenn's going to kind of hook us all up with all the information. But
wonderful.
I don't know what time it is and how much time we have left. And it was like I didn't even realize how we were going to fill 2 hours, but we did it.
Yes, we are. I have to run the closing credits here shortly. And what a remarkable guest you have been. We'd love to have you back sometime, maybe to go into more depth about the.
I would love to do it.
And maybe some of the families that you've helped and the things that have, because you know just the story alone of just walking into the conference hall and going, oh no, started singing, what was the song they began singing to you when you walked into the meeting there?
Oh, don't you my love.
Yes, there you are, trying to be all corporate and professional.
Corporate seed horn, you know, trying to like walk in there, you know, let's talk about stats, okay? You know, what's going on here versus what's going on and globally. And like domestically, we need some help here, you know, folk. It's been a pleasure. And you know what I need to say? It's been an honor to talk to you because you made things very easy for me. To sit and really feel calm and be able to share my life. And I want to thank you for that. You're a great host. And you keep doing what you're doing because you're helping a lot of people. You're keeping music alive and you're keeping our lives alive. And I want you also to continue to encourage DJs to continue to look at themselves as entertainers and artists. And the things that they do, it's a craft. It's a unique craft, and it's very, very important that they know that their work. I have artist CDs that have passed and have been gone for 10, 15 years, and I keep them and I treasure them because it was their babies. And it's to me, at the end of the show, I always say, you know, I introduce the DJs to the audience because I feel like they need to know that they're just like entertainers, you know, and they need to be appreciated as well.
Thank you, Debbie. Those are wonderful and very kind closing remarks, and I hate it that I have to wrap it, but we have some automated machinery that will make us all go dead unless I wrap the show.
I love you so much for joining us and everybody for listening.
Your life.
I really appreciate it.
Yes, and good evening to you, Debbie. Thank you. I'll be sure you get a copy of the archives. Bye-bye. Wonderful, absolutely wonderful guest. I need to let you know that this evening we're not going to be doing a horn section this evening due to various computer issues. So I'm going to say good night to you folks. We'll see you back tomorrow. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.